This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Leader plays it back in the line for Sherrod. His cross-ice pass picked off. Hartman trying to get a step on Buffalo. Hartman to the backhand scores! The Nashville Predators capitalize on the cross-ice pass. Ryan Hartman gives them the 1-0 lead.
From Thursday night's Jets-Predators playoff game, the game-winning goal by Ryan Hartman as the Predators go on to a 3-0 victory over the Winnipeg Jets.
Playoffs?
We're talking about playoffs?
Sure felt like playoffs.
It did feel like playoffs until the game sort of went a little bit off the rails during the penalty-filled second period, but that first period and the emotion involved certainly did feel like the playoffs. Mind you, it was game 4 of 82, but it was an entertaining battle. We'll talk about that. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba, for all those joining us live this morning on TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app. We say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. You can reach us here in studio at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to do it, via Twitter. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke. Gentlemen, a pleasure to see you on this rainy Saturday morning.
Could the NHL not have scheduled at least one game last night?
It's amazing that after 100 and what's the NHL been around for, about 105 years now, 103 years, that they ever have any day, unless it's like, you know, Christmas, that they just don't have a game. Like, how does that happen?
Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve, sure.
Sure they do have games then, don't they?
No, they don't have games. They take that blackout from Christmas Eve right through Boxing Day.
Oh, that's right.
So they have games on the 23rd and they have games on the 27th, but they give everyone 3 days off in between there, which is perfectly reasonable, perfectly fine. But I don't understand how you just go completely black on a Friday early in the season.
Well, that's just it. For me, it's because it's so early in the season, right? And you had, what, 12 games on Thursday?
Yeah.
And then you've got 14 today, so.
So? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, how did the schedule makers just sit back and say, yeah, no, that's okay. We're okay. We're just going to go completely dark. We don't want to compete with the NLCS featuring a city that doesn't have a hockey team or an NHL hockey team, and the Los Angeles Dodgers in this instance.
You think maybe they were trying to be nice to the Manitoba Moose
to give them the spotlight. Obviously victors last night in their home opener
with 8,000 fans present.
Yeah, nice crowd
to kick off a very busy sports weekend here in Winnipeg.
Certainly the Moose back in action later on tonight, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. And the Jets, of course, at home tomorrow evening or late afternoon, if you will, against the Carolina Hurricanes. And of course, the Bombers at home against the Saskatchewan Roughriders this afternoon at 1 o'clock. That's why we're on at 8 this morning. Blue and Gold Game Day with Bombing, Walby, and Westwood follows us at 11 in the morning. So just keep your radio tuned here to TSN 1290 all day long. We got you covered on everything sports-related today and, of course, tomorrow with the Jets and the Canes. But you're absolutely right, Ezzy. It doesn't make any sense that they would go dark on the Friday. But let's go back to Thursday night. And, I mean, that's hockey at its best. Take the result out of the equation, and we'll talk about the penalties, and we'll talk about the officiating a little bit as well. Two teams that don't like each other, having played a 7-game playoff series not that many months ago, and the hate boils over, and the emotions of it all are on their sleeve, and it just goes to show you what hockey with real passion behind it looks like, as opposed to, I don't know, I'm going to suggest 80 of the other games in the course of the regular season, or I guess they play the Preds 4 times this year, so 78 of the other games this season where they more or less are playing the game without the same level of emotion.
Yeah, Drew, to say that the Jets and the Predators don't like each other, I think, is an understatement. These two teams hate each other. And, you know, you saw Blake Wheeler and Nikolai Ehlers drop the gloves with Matthias Ekholm and Colton Sissons. It was like a good old-fashioned battle royale. And, you know, this game was a one-goal game in the third period.
Mm-hmm. Entering
the third. And, you know, when you look back at this game, everyone's going to talk about the penalties. And for good reason, Dave. I mean, it's very rare that you see an NHL team, or any team for that matter, take 8 consecutive minor penalties, and then the other team doesn't take any, right? So basically, 60% of the game was a penalty kill for mm-hmm. the Jets, and, you know, for me, that was what stood out. I mean, the Nashville Predators power play looked terrible.
0 goals on the season for the Predators power play so far.
Right, and you know that's pretty tough to do in this day and age,
especially when you have a 5-on-3 for a lot of it.
Right, and Josh Morrissey played 10.5 minutes shorthanded. 10.5 minutes. That's more than Christian Vesalainen played all game. Much more than Christian Vesalainen
played
all game.
4:38 or something like that.
It was something around 5 minutes. Yeah. So, I mean, Josh Morrissey and Jacob Trouba, I thought they had an excellent game, and I thought the TLC line had a great game. But I mean, when you look back at this game, some of the penalties, you just can't take those penalties. I mean, early on, Ben Chiarot's tripping penalty, Patrick Laine's double minor. I mean, those are penalties. Pardon me, Chiarot's slashing penalty. You know, Laine's high-sticking penalty, I mean, P.K. Subban was bleeding. That's a double minor. But I think the refs definitely missed a call in the second period. And, you know, when you're talking about, you know, Tyler Myers, for me, that shouldn't have been a misconduct. No. I mean, you give him 2 extra minutes. At a certain point in that game, I thought that the refs were trying to make themselves more important than they really needed to be.
The Myers one, to me, Dave, is one where the officials know that, you know, officials usually are not comfortable calling that many penalties in a row against the team. We've seen it. You know, usually you see maybe 3 penalties in a row go against one team, and then the officials are looking for a reason to call a penalty against the team that has been unpenalized through the course of the action.
And they want to even it up.
They want to even it up as reasonable as possible. Maybe they're looking. Maybe they give a little bit of a cheap call, and that's just sort of how it goes. When you've called that many penalties in a row, you know that the other team, or the Jets in this instance, are going to be frustrated. Tyler Myers is clapping. I mean, it's not like he, as far as we could tell, was verbally abusive of an official. At that point in time, the official just needs to keep his head down, look away, and not intervene in the game any more than they already have. Because a lot, to Ezzie's point, a lot of those calls may have been valid calls. But the one against Myers is the one where the official is trying to prove his dominance over the game and getting involved in a situation where he doesn't need to be involved.
And if you think about it from the Jets' perspective, they already had in that box Jacob Trouba and Dustin Byfuglien.
Absolutely.
So now you've lost your third defenseman for 10 minutes of the game with 2 others in the box. I mean, I'm of the similar mind to what you just suggested, Drew. The ref should have known that the Jets were frustrated, should have just seen Myers doing it. Now, Myers did it for an extended period of time. Like, it was a good cruise from, like, almost like from the blue line to his spot setting up for the faceoff. But, you know what, you can tell you've called 8 penalties in a row against the team. You know the team is going to be frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yes, is it considered disrespectful? Obviously, he's mocking the referee. But the fact of the matter is, as you just suggested, probably in that instance, the best suggestion for the ref is to just turn around. Because why are we even talking about the refs in a game? Like, the reality is, like, that game, especially that first period, was so exciting.
Yeah.
The action was so good. And I said this, I'm like, you know, sometimes people think that you need to have a goal for a game to be exciting. And that game was spectacular in that first period without, and there were only 2 penalties called against the Jets, right? So if you think about it from that perspective,
that first period was everything you want an NHL game to be.
Right.
It's everything you want an NHL playoff game to be, never mind a regular season game. And if we had seen 3 periods of that action, no, I mean, the second period was dramatic as well, but largely because of the parade to the penalty box. But if you see 3 periods of what you saw in the first period, I mean, that's exactly what the NHL wants. They want a rivalry between 2 teams that can play the game with a ton of skill and a ton of speed. And then, unfortunately, the latter 2 periods were a little bit more ragged just by almost the way the game unfolded with all the penalties.
Right. And, you know, going back to Tyler Myers, I actually think Myers had a great game. When he came back into the game, I thought he was excellent. And even though Dustin Byfuglien got into some penalty trouble, I thought that Buff had a good game as well. And you know, you guys watched the game. I mean, it was turnovers that resulted in directly into Jets goals. It wasn't the power play.
Nope.
You mentioned it. I mean, the Jets killed off all of the power plays, all 9 power plays that Nashville had. So, you know, on the second goal, perfect example. Buff's pass gets intercepted by Ryan Hartman. They go up the ice, and then Roman Josi ends up making it 2-0. So, I mean, you know, the Jets, I thought, at times in this game could have managed the puck better, but Connor Hellebuyck was excellent. I mean, let's be honest, guys. The reason why this game stayed low-scoring is because of Connor Hellebuyck. He was excellent. And sure, I'm not taking anything away from the penalty killers, Dave, but Connor Hellebuyck, I think, was undeniably the Jets' best penalty killer.
Well, the penalty killers did what they did last year, which is keep everything to the outside, not allow the cross seam passes where really those are the most dangerous ones. I mean, we know the Jets' penalty killing strategy is sort of unique in that they're okay giving up a lot of shots as long as those shots are from the outside. They're saying, yeah, you know, you can pepper our goalie with shots, but they're going to be from the outside, and we trust that our goalie is going to be able to make those saves. And so the Jets' structure on the penalty kill, despite where you would think it would get ragged after nine straight power play opportunities for the Predators, you think the Jets' penalty kill would break a little bit, didn't. And so that's certainly something to take as a positive away from the game. I mean, it's 1-0, to your point, Ezzie. It's 1-0, and then Byfuglien sort of, I mean, he's just dumping the puck into the corner in the Predator zone after the Jets had a lot of possession time in the Predator zone. And it happens very quickly that they transitioned to make it 2-0 with Yossi's slap shot. The Jets were the team that was pressing at that point in time. The Jets were the team that had the better offensive chances, you know, right in that instance around the goal. It just so happened the Predators in their quick strike offense struck against them.
Andrew, you mentioned earlier, you know, this is one of four meetings between these two teams. And, I mean, we're in for some good hockey this year. And I think everybody thought this was going to be a good game, but especially early on in the season, you don't know how good a game's going to be. You knew that the Jets and the Predators had that epic seven-game series in the second round last year, but I didn't think this game was going to be as aggressive as it was, and I certainly didn't think the Jets were going to get into as much penalty trouble as they got into. But, I mean, these are two teams that know, most likely, if they're going to get back to the Western Conference Final for the Jets, because obviously the Predators didn't get to the Western Conference Final, they know that they're going to have to go through each other. Most likely. No. I mean, and first-round upsets happen. And the Jets and the Predators, assuming they get into the playoffs, and most people assume they're going to get into the playoffs.
It's likely the Central Division final.
It's. I think you're looking at Pittsburgh-Washington in the West. I mean, Pittsburgh and Washington face each other every year.
In terms of the rivalry.
Right.
In terms of, well, that's what
I think it's the best rivalry in hockey right now.
Right now, I think it is. It's the two, I mean, last year it was the two best teams standings-wise playing an epic seven-game series that had everything you'd want to see in a playoff series.
I guess we should mention, too, Toronto-Boston's a good one.
Yeah, but it doesn't have the hate yet that this series has. I mean, that game was...
That has a traditional, but not a current.
Not a current hate. Yeah. I mean, you know, that game on Thursday night...
Montreal-Boston's also a good one.
Yeah, those are the historic rivalries. That game on Thursday night had the edge to it from puck drop.
That's a Pittsburgh Washington hate fest. Use a current one, two teams.
But I would agree with your. I mean, we can debate what rivalry reminds us of all day long. But I agree with you, Ezzie, that I think it right now the Jets and the Predators is the best rivalry because of the high end skill on the two teams, the dislike which comes from a playoff series, and the drama that all these games have had.
And I think, unfortunately, Drew, that to Ezzie's point about them playing four times, it's unfortunate that we won't see this game, this rematch, until December now.
Yeah.
So it's like it's, and then I think it's in March again, right? They play twice in March here.
Yes.
So if you think about that, I mean, that's almost like, you know, for fans who just were just loving what they saw. Obviously, not the end result, but they love the emotion involved in, as said, only the fourth game of the season, and it felt like, wow, this is April hockey or May hockey. But the fact of the matter is, you go from that, and then you're like, okay, well, now you got to wait till December, and then after that, you got to wait till March.
Yeah. Well, that's the unfortunate reality of the situation. Mm-hmm. We'll see a bit of an emotional letdown, I suspect, against the Carolina Hurricanes tomorrow when, you know, two teams that play each other twice a year face off, and it's not going to have the same
maybe a little,
you know,
Southeast
passion
hate
behind it.
I agree with that, Drew. There's no way that this game against the Hurricanes coming up, Dave, is going to have as much emotion as the game against the Predators. But if you look at this upcoming six-game homestand, Drew, and I know we're going to talk about it more as the show goes on here, but, you know, Carolina, even though they're undefeated right now, I mean, Carolina is not as good as Nashville, and the Jets are a much better team. You've got Vancouver coming up. You've got Edmonton coming up. You've got Arizona in there. Sure, the homestand ends with Toronto, but as far as I'm concerned, the Jets could easily win all of these games coming up.
It's an important homestand in the sense that it gives the Jets an opportunity to get above 500 and get on a run where they've been sort of win one, lose one throughout the course of the early part of this season.
I was looking at the schedule and kind of making my own predictions, and I could see the Jets either going 4-2, 5-1 on this homestand.
That's certainly an opportunity, this homestand, as the Jets should be favored in the majority of the next six games. When we come back, we discuss the Jets' propensity for taking penalties early in this year. Is it a concern? Is it going to continue? That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Tonight, I thought the Winnipeg Jets, they allowed the emotion to boil over and they took bad penalties. And I don't mind any of this as far as Blake Wheeler standing up for his teammates, guys getting involved. But what it did is it took them off of their game.
From SportsCenter on Thursday night, that's Jamie McLennan talking about the Jets, their lack of discipline, and how it impacted them. It's been an issue through the first four games of the season. The Jets back to their penalty-taking ways after they improved upon it last year. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuka, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Jets, obviously we talked about the penalties on Thursday night. 9 minor penalties versus the Nashville Predators. Never mind the majors for fighting that were handed out and the misconducts that were handed out, because there certainly were additional ones of that nature. 6 minor penalties against the Dallas Stars last Saturday. That certainly cost them, as the Stars were dynamite on the power play in Dallas. 4 minor penalties against the St. Louis Blues in the opening game. Didn't hurt the Jets that much. They won that game handily. And only the 2 minor penalties in the home opener against the LA Kings, a game the Jets won by a 2-1 margin. How concerned are you early on through this season about the Jets and their penalty-taking ways? Or do you think it's been an aberration? It's still too small of a sample size to get really worked up over?
I'm a little bit concerned. I think you have to be. When a team takes 8 minor penalties in a row. Now, it feels like we just flash back to 4 years ago and we're talking about the Jets being the most penalized team. Remember when they had Andrew Ladd and Evander Kane, and they got into Dustin Byfuglien. He was getting into a lot of penalty trouble. But I think you have to be a little bit concerned, Drew. And I mean, you look at the Jets, and right now they're leading the entire league in average penalties per game. Mm-hmm. They're at just over 23 minutes. I think it's 23 minutes and 15 seconds. The next team is the Detroit Red Wings, and they're at 14 minutes and 30 seconds. Yeah. But you also have to factor in that you had some misconducts and you had some fighting majors. So obviously the Jets are not going to be anywhere near 23 minutes a game. That's going to come down. I mean, that game against Nashville in Nashville was an aberration as far as the amount of minor penalties. I mean, the Jets very rarely take that many minor penalties. But I think what you have to be concerned about, Dave, is you have to be concerned about the slashing penalties, the high sticking penalties, the tripping penalties. How many tripping penalties were there in Dallas? I think there were 3. There were at least 2. And so those are the penalties that you want to take out of the game. Because as Paul Maurice said, when you're taking those stick penalties, those tripping penalties, those hooking penalties that I mentioned, that means that you're not moving your feet and the other team is outskating you. So as far as the, you know, Nikolaj Ehlers and Blake Wheeler dropping the gloves late in the second period against Nashville, I mean, you know, Drew, I love that type of stuff. That means that the players are engaged and getting into it. And the Jets rarely have, you know, any fights anymore. I mean, they don't have Chris Thorburn and Anthony Peluso like they do.
The NHL just obviously
NHL has evolved.
Yeah.
I mean, the fighting majors have been going down year after year. Really, you only see a fight, once every maybe 5 games out of the Jets, maybe more than that. So I'm more concerned with the stick penalties, Dave. So I think the Nashville game to me was much more concerning than the Dallas game, because the Nashville game, it just seemed to snowball. And the Jets seemed to let their emotions get the better of them. And in situations in which the Jets could get back into the game, they just couldn't, because they kept killing penalties. They had penalties to kill off. So I'm not concerned over the course of the year, because I think, you know, when you're playing a team like Nashville, I think you can expect some more penalties. Nashville's a gritty team. I mean, Nashville is much more difficult to play against than the LA Kings. And sure, the LA Kings still have some bruising bodies, but you knew that there were going to be some penalties in this game. So I think the Jets are going to clean this up. I wouldn't expect the Jets to, you know, take 7 or 8 penalties every single game. But I think it's something that Paul Maurice and the coaching staff has to address.
Dave?
No, I think as he hit it, I think they just – the penalties that they were taking, it's the nature of the penalties that they were taking. I think part of it maybe was by design. They were so unhappy with their penalty kill percentage after Dallas that they thought, you know, we really need to offset it. Now I think they're, you know, in the top 10 in the league, at least, or 10th in the league in PK. So maybe that was all by design. But, no, clearly you can't be doing that. And especially for a team that uses speed as one of their biggest assets, this is a Jets team that can't be standing around and taking those types of penalties. So I think taking penalties is inevitable in a game.
Yep.
You know, that's something that you're not going to say, well, you can't, you're going to go a game without any. But the reality is, again, as you just touched on, it's the nature of the penalties that they were taking. And I think if they can clean that aspect up, A, your coach is going to be happy. And I think, B, you're going to be happy. Because the fact of the matter is that you just can't afford to do that. And now you got lucky in that you were going against a Nashville team that hadn't scored, as you touched on earlier in the first segment, Drew, a power play goal yet this season.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is that, you know, look what happened when Dallas came to town. And again, your PK's got some new personnel on it. You're figuring some stuff out this season. So you don't really want to be giving that many opportunities to a team that's going to maybe burn you. It's unusual because Nashville has so many weapons that they haven't scored a power play goal. And as he touched on it the last segment too, and he's right, Connor Hellebuyck was phenomenal. I mean, Connor Hellebuyck was excellent that game. So with the exception of, I mean, there very easily could have been 2, 3, 4 power play goals if Connor Hellebuyck isn't on his game and isn't your best penalty killer.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I think the Nashville game, I mean, there's almost a bit of an aberration because of all the emotion. And the Jets, mm-hmm. you know, probably have to do a better job of harnessing that emotion. I thought Nashville, you know, who certainly were involved and you know, emotionally invested in the game, did a better job of not getting carried away than the Jets did. And I don't know if that's a function of the Jets' youth because they're still a young team or just sort of the excitement of playing in the opposing team's arena and the emotion that comes, you know, with trying to disappoint a hometown crowd. But the Jets, for whatever reason, just weren't able to harness their emotion as well as Nashville did, which I think resulted and led to some of those extra penalties that the Jets took. I don't expect this to be an issue. I don't expect that the Jets are going to go back to where they were a couple years ago. We remember when they brought in training camp last year,
Dvorsky.
They brought in Paul Dvorsky to talk about penalties and to talk about what they can do to reduce the number of penalties that they've been taking. I'd be surprised if the Jets completely lose their minds. The Jets are never going to be a team, I think, in the bottom five of the NHL in terms of the number of minor penalties they take. They're big, they're physical. I think they just have a tendency to be more penalized than a lot of other teams. But I think as long as they finish in a area similar to where they were last year, where I think they finished 10th in the most minor penalties taken, that's probably where they're going to end up. Anything higher than that's probably a little disappointing.
Do you think Paul Maurice really cares where they rank?
I think he doesn't want the team giving up. You look at that game on Thursday night. They couldn't. He talked about it. He had half the team on the bench completely gassed because they were playing the penalty kill so much.
I agree with you, but you're saying 10th, and, you know, we mentioned earlier.
Oh, I mean, I don't really think he's looking at it and say, well, we've taken two more penalties than the 13th place team.
Put it this way. Like you said, you don't want to be top two, top three, top five even. You want to probably be somewhere in the middle because I agree with you. When you have players like Dustin Byfuglien and Ben Chiarot and Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev, I mean, that's part of the identity of the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a lot about how fast and skilled the Jets are, but the Jets are also big and physical.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of their game, especially the TLC line. I mean, the TLC line, it's not just their speed. It's the fact that they can get in on the forecheck and they can be disruptors, right?
So they make life uncomfortable for the opposition with their physicality and with their speed,
right.
And that's just part of their identity.
And it's obviously a huge part of Buff's game.
Absolutely.
I mean, look back at that first round against the Wild.
Yeah, well,
I mean, the Wild were scared to go anywhere near him.
I can't really blame them for that. That just seems like an advisable opinion to take.
And I think the counterpoint or the other thing to think about is the fact that because of the penalties, I mean, you had Christian Vesalainen play 5 minutes. You had Matthew Perreault play 7 minutes. I mean, that's the problem. You're getting guys who aren't playing any minutes. They're not getting engaged in the game. So I think really the takeaway is the nature of the penalties that they're taking. And, I mean, look, one-for-one penalties, like if, you know, Nikolaj Ehlers and Kolton Sissons are fighting, fine. You don't want to see Nikolaj Ehlers fighting very often, but
Decent fighter.
Yeah, that was good. It was a good fight for him. But what I'm getting at is...
Well, do you guys remember when Ehlers took Tyson Berry down?
Yeah. That was his first fight. I mean, he's only had two fights.
He ragdolled Tyson Berry.
I remember.
Tyson Berry is quite quite bigger than Nikolaj Ehlers.
Most NHLers are bigger than Nikolaj Ehlers, but he surprisingly is able. I don't know what they
were teaching. Does Ehlers have like a black belt or something that we don't know about?
I'm not sure what they were teaching him in Halifax and Junior, but apparently things were getting a little rough in the Mooseheads organization back in the day. He can certainly, I mean, you don't want to see him fighting, but he's been able to acquit himself decently during his two fights in the NHL.
You definitely do not want Ehlers fighting. You want him scoring, but back to your point, I mean, it could have been that because the Jets were in a hostile environment that they took all of those penalties, but it also could have just been game-specific. I mean, it was just a game in which the Jets didn't manage their emotions.
Yeah, fluky things happen. We'll talk about emotions with Trevor Kidd up next. We're going to talk more about the Jets with the TSN 1290 hockey analyst. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning. Hope you're enjoying some Winnipeg Jets talk here on your home of the Jets, TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Trevor Kidd. You know Trevor, of course, as a TSN 1290 Winnipeg Jets analyst. You hear him with Kevin O on the pre- and post-game show throughout the entirety of the Jets season. Trevor, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, fellas.
You know, I want to take you back to Thursday night, Trevor. You know, obviously you had a long and storied NHL career, and I assume you were in some situations and in some games where you really have sort of a hate on for your opponent, and that's really what it felt like for the Jets and the Predators on Thursday night. How difficult is it for a team to sort of keep their composure when you really have that rival and you have that opponent that you really truly have a dislike for, like we saw on Thursday night?
Well, usually it's not that difficult. I mean, usually, you know, when you have games like that and rivals like that, you look forward to those games, you circle in the calendar, and partly because they're a little bit easier to get up for. The focus is there. The attention to detail is usually there. And they're just simply a lot of fun when you start talking about an 82-game schedule. Those ones are, again, enjoyable to play. So I think there was just a combination of a bunch of different things. I mean, you go back to last year and game seven and emotions that were involved there in that playoff series against the Preds. And now you get into the regular season here, and it is early, and the Preds raise their banner against the Flames, and we can talk about those banners and the wonky ones at that. But, you know, and they lose to the Flames, so now this is their second game at home, and they're looking to get off their, home regular season, get it started and going in the right direction. And to me, it was just it was a bunch of different things. And Maurice had mentioned it throughout the day there, even himself talking about these games and the emotions that are involved. And there was some undisciplined penalties there. Certainly you could probably look at some of those being the composure component. But to me, when you look at the season as a whole, I like the way the Jets have started. To me, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And the first four games of the season here for them have been tough battles. They've had some good divisional opponents, whether it be the Blues and now the Preds, and just having those, I think, early in the season just helps shake the cobwebs of the summer, of the preseason, and just, to me, even coming here at home now, starting with a nice little homestand with the Carolina Hurricanes, to me, coming out of that game with the Predators, you'd have to say everybody's engaged now in regards to the regular season.
Now, Trevor, sticking with that game in Nashville, we were talking about it earlier in the show. I thought that Connor Hellebuyck was the Jets' best penalty killer. And by the way, it might have something to do with the number that he wears. That's a great number. When you're talking, Trevor Kidd, of course, also used to wear number 37 for those who don't know. But did it seem to you that at points in that game when the Jets were killing off those penalties, that it was almost like Hellebuck was inside the heads of the Predator shooters.
You know what? He's Connor Hellebuck is on his game right now, and it's great to see. He's been sharp in all the games, and the ones that he's lost, including that game that you mentioned, that PK, absolutely. It was standard issue type stuff. I mean, you want to talk about the Jets PK in regards to giving up those top of the circle type shots, and a lot of them were one-timers from the left circle, and Connor Hellebuck was doing a heck of a job tracking the puck and making some quality saves. The Jets did a good job in what they try and do on that PK, is right to take away the backdoor plays, take away the in-type plays, the seam-type plays. They give those shots from the circles, and Connor Hellebuck was bang on in making a ton of very good saves. And I said this yesterday, was on the Drive show with Huss and Rick. The one thing when you make the comparison between the two goalies, Hellebuck and Pekka-Rinne, in that game is Pekka-Rinne certainly Vezina Trophy, world-class goaltender. But there's a lot of stuff when you talk about second and third opportunities in and around the blue paint. The Jets just couldn't get there, but there's a lot of rebounds. And Pekka-Rinne does a great job in taking up those second and third opportunities. Part wise, he's such the goaltender that he is. But when you make that comparison to Connor Hellebuck and start talking about rebound control and swallowing pucks and making saves with his glove and just eliminating those second and third opportunities for the opposition, I thought Connor Hellebuck was bang on in that game. Obviously, some world-class goals when you talk about the ones that did go by him, breakaways, unfortunate turnovers by the back line. But generally speaking, no, Connor Hellebuck had a very good game, in particular the PK, as you mentioned.
Trevor, one player that's, you know, a lot of fans have their eye on is Christian Vesalainen. He's played his first four professional games. He's averaging about 7 minutes per game. What have been in your impressions of him so far?
Well, you know what, I mean, everybody, you keep kind of looking for the offensive type things, the flashes to come out. And to me, you just haven't seen that. You saw it a little bit in that Minnesota game in the preseason where he does that nifty little spinorama move and beats Dubnyk. And really, for the most part, for me anyways, that was, you know, one of the few times you've seen him on the offensive side do something like, okay, this guy's going to be a player in regards to the offensive output of his game. Now, with that said, he has been, and Maurice has mentioned it, that he's been very, very good in regards to his defensive game, making the right plays, making the right reads. And, you know, you can go to, you know, last year when Maurice starts talking about these young guys and their creativity, he really wants them to still, how do you say this, turn the puck over in the right areas, right? So you maintain your creativity, maintain what you want to do in the offensive part of the game, but there's times to do it and there's areas to do it in. And Christian, I think Vesalainen is learning that part of his game from the offensive part, and knowing that the Jets and the identity that they have is all about the 200-foot game, is all about making sure they're playing the right way defensively. So from a defensive standpoint, I think Vesalainen is probably over exceeded expectations. We've yet to see his offensive output, but to me, you know, you start watching practices, you start watching some of the things when there is an opportunity for him to shine in that regard, that it is there, and you can see the potential that part of his game is just a matter of time until we start seeing it maybe on a more regular basis.
Trevor Kidd is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Trevor's an analyst here on TSN 1290. You know, Trevor, I keep looking at that second line of the Jets of Laine and Ehlers and Little, and, you know, they continue to try and find chemistry with the three of them that hasn't been there for, I would suggest, over a year now. You know, at what point in time does Paul Maurice sort of, you know, give up on that, for a lack of a better word, and maybe bring Jack Roslovic up there or even make more radical changes to the second and third lines?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? We just haven't seen the flare out of that line. I mean, we really haven't yet to this point. When you start making the comparisons, and, you know, you compare to the Connor Wheeler Scheifele line, or even the Lowry line that does such a great job in the offensive zone. What you see from those two lines is, yes, you see the standard issue stuff when you talk about the Winnipeg Jets and using their speed and getting through the neutral zone and opportunities off the rush. But you see from those two lines the second wave type attack, the stuff behind the goal line, the stuff below the face-off dots in the offensive zone, the cycles, the quick turns. You can talk about Scheifele and Wheeler doing that in the corners. You can talk about Tanev and Lowry working behind the goal line, and even make reference to the Predator game there. That first 10 minutes of that Preds game was back and forth, but how many times did you see the Lowry line in the offensive zone battling behind the goal line, drawing all the Preds down to below the faceoff dots and then feeding the puck back to the points that were completely wide open and getting a shot to the net? You know, and the Scheifele line does fairly similar work. That is the one thing that you just haven't seen from the little line A Ehlers line. You're seeing some flashes from Ehlers in regards to getting through the neutral zone and getting those shots off that Coach Maurice wants to see him be a little bit more direct. But you just, to me, haven't seen that offensive zone time in regards to the battle, cycling the puck down low behind the goal line and then finding those opportunities, those second wave opportunities. So It's tough. I mean, you can make the reference to Brian Little maybe having to be a little bit more defensive responsible and being a little bit lower on the breakout in regards to him getting through the neutral zone from that point and trying to get in to be that F1, that first forechecker, because we know Patrick Laine is probably not going to be the guy behind the goal line dishing pucks out or forcing turnovers or being hard on pucks there. He wants to be the guy in the slot. He wants to be the guy in the top of the circle. So those players have to be Ehlers. It has to be Little. That has to be, and you go back to last year, and I don't want to, it is history, but, you make the quick comparison to Stasny. If you think to Stasny last year, how many times he would be behind the goal line creating offense for Ehlers and Laine from just making plays, from creating turnovers behind the net. So we haven't seen that yet. How, is it 2 weeks? Is it 2 months? Is it 2 years? Do we see somebody, step up? And obviously, you see Rossovic there kind of just sitting in waiting. So we'll see. I think, Coach Maurice is a veteran type guy. He's going to allow this to play out a little bit longer to see if they can find that chemistry. But it certainly is something that needs to be looked at, but I think something that needs to be fixed here, because at some point in time you can't be just a two-line team, and the good problems to have in regards to having all these depth pieces, but the problem is making the chemistry work, and it is a job for Maurice to figure out here as we roll through the early part of the season.
Kidder, I'm assuming that you don't have a crystal ball in front of you, but the Jets have 6 home games coming up, starting tomorrow against the Carolina Hurricanes. There's no back-to-back games coming up on this homestand. Does Connor Hellebuyck play all 6 of these games, or do you want to get Lauren Brossoit into a game here on this homestand?
Ah, boy. You know what? To me, and we talked about this yesterday, too, I'm rolling with Connor Hellebuyck right now. To me, getting off to a good start is important in regards to looking at the conference, looking at the division. I don't think you want to play the chase game in regards to the Central Division. So to me, having a homestand like this so early in the season, as you mentioned, really not a taxing type schedule as far as anyone's concerned, and in particular the goaltender. So there's some rest that's built in to in between those games. Obviously, they do a heck of a job of managing, even going back to last year, the games between the goaltenders and Connor Hellebuyck. But hey, coming out of the summer and then the preseason, you have your number one goaltender feeling good, looking good, sharp in his game. To me, you got a homestand here that you're lucky to have so early in the season. Why not try and make the best of it and make some good hay in regards to the standing? So to me, yeah, I'm rolling with Connor Hellebuyck here for the entire homestand, unless something, happens, for whatever reason, play or injury or otherwise. But to me, now is not the time to try and, squeak a Brossoit in for a game when you have your number one netminder playing the way he is.
Trevor Kidd is an analyst here on TSN 1290. Kidder, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, all. Have a great morning.
You too, Trevor. When we come back, we discuss Christian Vesalainen, You know, what do we do with him? What do the Jets do with him as he approaches the 10-game mark? That's much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Cross ice, Bufflin, and a big save. What a great pass from that far side. Vasilainen scores. Christian Vasilainen jumps on a loose puck and takes a high stick, but he gets it past Devan Dubnyk. Power play goal Jets, and they have the 2-1 lead.
Christian Vasilainen scoring. That was from the preseason, unfortunately, for Winnipeg Jets fans and for Christian himself. He's got one assist through his first four games as a member of the Winnipeg Jets, at least when the games count as a member of the Winnipeg Jets.
Preseason goals don't count?
Not really, no. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. As I mentioned, we'll talk about Christian Vasilainen. Thus far, he's played four games for the Winnipeg Jets. Hasn't got a ton of ice time, maxing out at 8 minutes and 14 seconds, 12 shifts that he got against the Dallas Stars last Saturday. Have you seen enough of Christian Vasilainen to give an educated opinion as to whether or not he should be up with the Winnipeg Jets past the 10-game mark and then even past the 40-game mark, which is another milestone for a player to reach in their original season, in their rookie season?
Probably not, Drew, but I think the answer is in your question when you talk about Christian Vasilainen, because he's not playing enough, and that's my issue right now with Vasilainen. I mean, Vasilainen, we go back to that draft. We were there, at least I was there, with Huss and Paul Edmonds. There were some scouts that thought Vasilainen should be a top 10 pick, even a top 15 pick. And, you know, the Jets were able to get him at, it was 24, I believe.
Something like around there.
Something like that. And when you're talking about his skill set, I mean, Vesalainen's got the size. He's got an excellent shot. He put up big-time numbers in the Finnish League last year. Scott Wheeler of The Athletic wrote a really good article about Vasilainen, and his major point was saying that Vasilainen is not going to be your prototypical power forward. He's not going to be a guy like Alex Ovechkin, even, if you want to call him a power forward. He's going to be a guy that relies on his shot a lot and scoring from long distances. Similar to Patrick Laine, actually. Vesalainen's going to be a guy that plays a lot on the power play, and even as his career progresses, he might even get out there on the penalty kill a lot. I think he's going to be more of a two-way forward than Laine, but the point is, Vesalainen has all the skill in the world. But right now, he's on the fourth line. And that is the fourth line right now. If you base, you know, the lines on the amount of ice these guys are getting,
sure,
the TLC line right now is your third line.
Might even be your second line. It's strictly based on ice time.
Well, you know, I wouldn't get carried away. I wouldn't call Laine, Little, and Ehlers your third line.
I know.
But if it is, that would be a pretty good third line. But the point is, you know, you asked me and Dave if we think that, you know, you've seen enough of Vesalainen in four NHL games to determine, you know, if he's going to stay here. And obviously, you know, that's the job of Jets management and coaching staff. But at a certain point, you wonder if his time is being wasted here as opposed to playing top-line minutes for the Manitoba Moose or in the Finnish League. And right now, I think Christian Vasilainen has to be deployed in a scoring role. He has to be playing more.
He has to be playing more than 5 minutes
a
game.
So what I've seen of Vasilainen, it's not a lot. And when I have seen him, I mean, he hasn't been effective. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to sit here and say in four games with the Jets he's been great.
How much of that is the role that he's being played? I mean, like, to Ezzy's point, Dave, you know, 8-14 was the most he's played, and that was last Saturday against Dallas.
Well, it's not like he's playing with bad players.
No,
he's playing with Matty Perreault and Jack Roslovic.
You haven't been able to see enough of that line. I mean, all those guys, Roslovic, same thing, is playing very few minutes right now. It seems like
he hasn't stood out is what I'm saying.
I understand. It seems like Paul Maurice needs to put an emphasis, and maybe it starts tomorrow against Carolina, and certainly to some extent it's been about game flow, and, you know, against Nashville with all the penalties there, we weren't able to get into a game flow, but the Jets need a line of Roslovic, Perreault, and Vasilainen, and if that's going to be, you know, the line that's staying together for now, they need to be on the ice more than 8 minutes. They need to get 10, 12, 13 minutes to be to at least have an impact on the score sheet, Dave.
Look, it's early in the season, but the Jets are 24th in the league for scoring, and that's one thing we never thought the Jets would have a problem with is sure. scoring goals, right? They have eight to this point in the season, and that's not what you would think with this Winnipeg Jets squad, and I think to your point...
Well, and five of those eight are from the Connor Scheifele-Wheeler line.
Right, exactly.
And the one game against the Blues.
Right, and so and that's kind of my point. My point is that you know, or Drew, you just made the point, but I agree with it, is the idea of deployment. And I think that you're sitting there thinking to yourself, like, you have these guys, you know, Tanev, Lowry, and Kopp, they're not going to get you the goals that Roslovic, Little, Laine, Connor, you know, like those guys are going to get you. You know, you're
that's
whatever.
Not the role that they're deployed in.
Right. And I get it. I get it that, you know, as you just said, you know, flow of the game sometimes dictates that you need to use those guys more than you probably want to. But the fact of the matter is you got to start getting these guys out because you're not going to have any success putting Christian Vesalainen in 8 minutes first game, 8 minutes second game, five the next, and then four or, you know, six and then five. You know, decreasing his time is not going to get him into the flow. And that's exactly what a young player needs.
And I don't think a decision on Vesalainen is coming soon, but you think about that two-game set in Finland. I mean, I think that plays in here.
Take him there and potentially he could just stay there afterwards?
Well, I mean, Christian Vesalainen's from Finland.
Sure.
I think, you know, at least part of the reason why, you know, he's on the team right now is for that set of games. I don't think it's just that, but I think that has factored in a little bit. And when you talk about Vesalainen, I think it comes down to, do you want to burn a year in his entry-level deal? Or it's possible they've already decided they're going to burn that year.
Well, the point to remember is that it seems like a lot of teams are less concerned about burning that year of entry-level contract. They're okay with going over the 10-game mark, but the big question is that 40-game mark, which when you get to the 40-game mark, you're a year closer to unrestricted free agency.
Right.
So that's the, sort of the two time frames you're looking at. 10 games burns a year of the entry-level, but doesn't move them any closer to UFA status.
I would agree with that, Drew. Usually burning an entry-level contract is more applicable to guys that are going to be sent back to junior hockey.
Sure. That's
right. As opposed to guys that are going to play in the American Hockey League or in Finland. And I agree with you. I mean, I think, you know, a determination of whether Dave Vesalainen is going to stay up with the Jets is probably going to come in December or January once you get closer to 40 games. Because right now, I think they knew the Jets coaching staff knew there was going to be some growing pains. And it's only four games. I think we should wait at least 15 or 20 games before we make a decision. This six-game stand is very crucial for the Jets. We talked about it. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of winnable games here, but it's also very crucial for Christian Vesalainen because as far as I'm concerned, again, I'm not saying that he's a bust. I think he's going to score a lot of goals in the NHL. I'm just saying the first four games of the season, and it has a lot to do with the fact that he hasn't played that much.
Yeah.
I just haven't been that impressed with him.
He hasn't, and the Jets haven't been able to deploy him in situations where he can shine, which should change on this six-game homestand, given that they
right.
get last change. You can get him into some offensive zone face-off situations where he may be able to stand out more and play more than the 5 minutes that he's been playing in the last couple of games.
Right, and you know it's probably the kiss of death, probably because I said that. He's probably going to score a hat-trick tomorrow.
Well, usually you are, yeah. You do provide some momentum for some motivation for some people to show you up. When we come back, John Forslund is the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster. He joins us next to talk about the Jets' opponent tomorrow evening. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Along the boards. Furland off. Sticks in front. They score! Sebastian Aho! A beautiful play right out in front on his backhand. And Seabass has his first of the season. And the Canes have a 2-1 lead.
John Forslund with the call. Sebastian Aho with the goal. The Hurricanes off to a good start this 2018-19 season.
Great start.
A great start, yes indeed. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets, Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster John Forsland. John joins us from St. Paul, Minnesota, where the Hurricanes face the Minnesota Wild tonight before heading to Winnipeg to play the Jets tomorrow evening. John, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, guys. Good morning.
John, obviously, talk about the Hurricanes. A very impressive start to the season for the team. 3-0-1 through their first four games played. And they seem like a team that's just having a lot of fun right now. That great end-of-game celebration that we talked about earlier on our midweek show, you know, where they clap and then jump into the end boards when they win. It seems like a team that's loose and really having fun so far early this year.
Well, that post-game celebration, you know, caught all of us by surprise, and it truly does kind of depict what their early season identity is. And, you know, guys, going back to the end of last season, I think after years and years of turnover and a little bit of a rebuild, most importantly, at the end of last year, it was a faceless team. It was a team just searching for an identity like many teams do when you lose. And over the course of the offseason, a lot of the changes that were made, and the most important adjustment I think they made was allowing Rod Brindamore this opportunity to be the head coach. And from day one of training camp, he was able to kind of put, you know, his personality on this group and demand a high standard of work. And because of that work ethic, I think they were ready to compete. They rolled through their preseason at 5-0-1. You know, sometimes you can look at a preseason and say, well, it's not going to matter much when the bell rings. And sometimes you just keep going. And this team has just plowed right along, and they haven't looked any different. So a lot of great stories, individual stories. Most importantly, I think they've come together as a group. They have good early season chemistry. And you're right. It's one of these teams that's trying to have fun, but you can only have fun if you win.
John, I imagine that you thought we were going to ask you about the goaltending, and we really do have to ask you about the goaltending.
Sure.
Scott Darling is injured right now with that hamstring injury, and Curtis McIlhenny was acquired off of waivers from the Toronto Maple Leafs about a couple of weeks ago, and he's got two wins in his first two starts with the Hurricanes, I guess. First part of the question is, who's going to get the start in net for the Hurricanes tonight against Minnesota? Who should we expect in net versus the Jets tomorrow night? And when Scott Darling does come back from injury, what do the Hurricanes do with Curtis McIlhenny?
Well, Curtis McIlhenny has been a tremendous story, as you know. In his two starts, he's been fantastic. His first start, he carried the team in a win at Columbus last Friday night. His second start was a home win against Vancouver on Tuesday. He's come in. He's, as you know, he's a tested pro. Everywhere he has been, he's been a contributor and kind of an underrated guy throughout the years. So at 35, this is probably his last kick at the can when they acquired him off waivers. And as you point out, they had to because of a hamstring injury to Scott Darling, who looked very good in training camp, but unfortunately in the last preseason game came up lame and never got through the game, left halfway through. So Darling's with the team, and he's going to be with them throughout this three-game road trip, skating and rehabbing, and maybe a week away from returning. It's likely that Curtis McIlhenny will start tonight in Minnesota. You guys should see Peter Mrazek if the plan holds true. And they're going to kind of alternate those two until Darling comes back. When Darling comes back, they're going to have a big decision to make. And I think they'll keep three goalies for a bit. I don't think they want to surrender McIlhenny and expose him again on waivers. Maybe Toronto gets a chance to pluck him back, whatever happens to him. I still think it's a big enough question mark that the team is looking at this long and hard before they settle on who will be the goalie or what the best route is for a tandem or whatever they get to. Because as well as they play, and they've been able to score a ton of goals here in the first four games, without the saves, without this average to above average goaltending, no team goes anywhere. And certainly the Hurricanes have really taken a hit in this area over the last few years.
John, after 10 seasons as a player and 7 as an assistant coach, Rob Brindamore, as you touched on in your first answer, is getting to make his mark as the head coach now of this team. How have you seen him really kind of take ownership and put his stamp on this group?
Well, the thing about Rod is he's a real person. And what I mean by this is he's really authentic, and a lot of people might not get that from observing him as a player, because, you know, you watch Rod Brindamore as a player over his 17 seasons. I mean, this was a guy who was a gritty and a skilled player, put up a ton of points, I think should be in the Hall of Fame conversation, was a championship player, was a guy who could get in the Selke conversation every single season. So He was also very serious. And when you watched him, you know, he got a lot of notoriety for his off-ice training and so on, Rod the Bod and all this stuff. But within all of that, those of us that have been lucky to be around him understand what he's like as a human being. And he's as authentic a guy as you can get. And the thing about Roddy is when he played, he was relatable to every guy in the room. So he understood, you know, what star players, what was expected of star players. He also could really relate to fourth line guys, extra players, the goaltenders. I mean, this was a guy that understood what every guy on the team was going through. And because of that, I think he's going to really adapt to coaching. And I think he understands today's athletes too. And I think that's really important. There's been a shift, you know, a generational shift in players. And Rod understands, you know, how to present information to today's guys. And that shouldn't be overlooked in any coaching situation because it is entirely different than it was 20 years ago. So players come in today, they're informed, they want to know more, they want to get to why, they don't like to be berated, belittled, and so on, and they get all that, respect that. And what he needs to do is make sure the guys buy into what he's selling. So first of all, like I said in the previous answer, he's been able to lay down that work ethic. That's the most important thing. They've done a ton of skating throughout training camp and right through the course of the regular season in terms of their practices, which you know, makes them aggressive on the ice. They've been able to be aggressive in all three zones. Their forecheck is pretty relentless when you watch this team play. And you don't get there without a real good skating base. So he's been able to accomplish that. And then he's just asked guys to, play for each other and put in the work completely, no shortcuts. They sound like cliches, but that's the way he was as a player. And so he's just asking of that right now, and I think the players respect him a ton. You know, they don't have to Google the name. They know who he is, and that's why it's working so far.
John Forslund is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. John is the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster. You're listening, of course, to TSN Radio 1290. John, Andrei Svechnikov, he was the second overall pick in last year's draft. He's become the first player born in the year 2000 to score in the NHL, making us all feel old, of course. You know,
you guys.
How special of a player are we talking about? You know, when Jets fans get the opportunity to watch Svechnikov for the first time tomorrow, what should they be looking for? What stands out to you the most about this dynamic young talent?
His shot, number one. He's got an outstanding shot and a great release, and he wants the puck, and he plays with confidence for a young player, and he's powerful, and he's an A to B player. So when you watch him, you know, he's not going to razzle and dazzle, and you won't maybe notice that at first. But as the game goes along, and they're being careful with him, you know, they started him on, for all practical purposes, a fourth line. He was okay in camp, but he wasn't like this phenom who just you would jump out at you during practices and during the preseason games. But you can see what his makeup, you can see, you know, first of all, at 18, he's genetically way ahead of where he's supposed to be. I mean, he's sturdy, 6'2", 195 pounds, very strong. So he'll fill out a little bit more, but there isn't a long way to go. That's the first thing you look at a young player. And then he plays a power game with purpose. And they're teaching him some of the defensive acumen that I think he just, as a dominant player, where he was Rookie of the Year in the USHL 2 years ago, he's Rookie of the Year in the OHL last year, you know, 40 goal scorer. He just dominated those levels. When that happens, you know, a lot of times you're just going one way. And when you come here and the defensive responsibilities are huge and the total game has to be there and the coach has to trust you in all these areas, that's the learning curve he's on. So he's off to a good start. He's got game-winning goals in back-to-back games. He has his 4 points. You look at the stat sheet, say, wow, 4 points plus four, two plus two, all good. But I think, you know, again, they're going to be careful, make sure he's insulated. They have a couple of young kids they're trying to break in, and it's just not an easy league. So that's what you'll see. And when he has the puck and when he's on the attack, and you'll see him on the power play in one of the units, he's fundamentally sound. There are times, though, that he'll have his defensive issues, and because of that, they'll back off his ice time a little bit.
You know, John, you mentioned the attack, and I wanted to ask you about the defense. Obviously, there's some new names back on the Carolina Hurricanes back end, Dougie Hamilton and Calvin DeHaan. What have you noticed most as far as differences go between this group of blue liners? Because obviously, there's some returning players, your familiar names like Justin Falk and Brett Pesce and Jacob Slavin. But when you're talking about Dougie Hamilton and Calvin DeHaan, have they just made this team more dangerous from the back end as far as moving the puck and getting in on the attack?
Yeah, they have. They're threats, obviously huge threats, especially Hamilton, and the other teams know this. But what's happened is they've kind of changed the makeup of what was a pretty solid defensive group anyway before the Hanifin trade and going over the 4 years that Bill Peters was the coach. As you guys know, I mean, they were a analytical, statistical dream over the last 4 years that didn't really get them anywhere. Suppression, defensive zone, capitalizing on neutral zone turnovers, the young dynamic defense led by Jacob Slavin and Brett Pesce and then Noah Hanifin and so on. But with the trade, you add Hamilton, who's a 5-on-5 scoring threat. DeHaan's a very steady guy. It drops Justin Falk into the right side on the second pair, and he's had a pretty good start to his season after an inconsistent year last year. But it's taken Brett Pesce away from Jacob Slavin, which for a long time, for 3 years running, had been a real good tandem, a 1-2 lockdown tandem that they relied on. Hamilton right now plays with Slavin. Pesci's dropping into the third pairing and bringing along either Hayden Fleury or Trevor Van Riemsdyk. They're encumbered a little bit because they have, if they dress Van Riemsdyk, they'll dress four right-handed shots. You don't see that a lot. But the key to everything back there is the newness and just trying to figure out how these pairings are going to work. They're playing more of an aggressive style. They take more risks, so they give up a few more chances than they have. But it's paying off so far in terms of the way they're playing. But we can't make any mistake. The best player, and maybe the best player on the team, is Jacob Slavin. And he's off to a great start. He anchors that defense. He doesn't get enough notoriety around the league, but he will. And this is a guy that is a stalwart. He's a stalwart defenseman in all areas. And, you know, he still has a long way to go as far as his career is concerned. But he's the guy right now that's holding everything together. But I think once they figure out the chemistry and how all of that is going to work, the possibilities are endless. It's a pretty good group of defensemen.
You know, John, we talk about the youth of the Carolina Hurricanes. Just how important has Jordan Staal been as a veteran leader in that group?
He's been one of their most valuable players through the first four games. And, you know, when you look at what he went through last year, he lost an unborn and he was a finalist for the Masterton Trophy, and he played through all of that. And, you know, since he came to the Hurricanes in 2012, it's just been one miserable season after another for this guy, and he put a lot of responsibility on his shoulders. The one thing about the Stalls, the care factor is like through the roof, and sometimes it becomes an issue for them because they do care so much about team success, and they get, you know, encumbered by it mentally, I think, by watching them. But this last year was an outstanding season for Jordan, and this year looks even better. So he is the hidden story, because there's so much focus on Brind'Amour, the younger guys. We talked about Svechnikov. There's Marty Natchez. There's all these young guys and the newcomers that they have. The two guys anchoring the team right now are Jordan Staal and Justin Williams. Williams is captain and Staal at his side. So Jordan right now is one thing about the Hurricanes. They've been a late team over the last few years physically. They were 28th in hits last year. They're tied for second in the league right now in the early season, which is totally different. Staal's been averaging 5 to 6 hits a game. He's number two in faceoff percentage, and his points are very good right now. So he is he's enjoying this. I think he's feeding off the energy. It's a positive vibe, finally, you know, around this team, which it's been a long time coming.
John Forslund is the Carolina Hurricanes play-by-play broadcaster. The Hurricanes in St. Paul to face the Wild tonight before they make their way to Winnipeg to face the Jets tomorrow. John, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you at the rink tomorrow night.
All right, we'll see you there, guys. Take care. Thanks for having me.
Take care, John. Thanks again. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, more on the Jets and the Hurricanes. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Do the skull clap again. Oh, yeah.
Ferland's leading it.
Ferland is the ringleader. They called for a tweak. Here they come. The surge is on.
happy. Look at how high Fogle got on the left side. He was practically three-quarters up the glass, the ringleader. Spectacular.
The Carolina Hurricanes end-of-game victory celebration making some news around the NHL. They only do it on home ice. I think if they did it on the road, they'd be the hometown fans might be a little upset about it. But it's just a home ice celebration. It's a lot of fun. The Jets and the Canes, of course, tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place. A game you can hear live on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys, specializing in customization services and branded team apparel. Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. This isn't the doormat Carolina Hurricanes anymore. They're off to a very good start this season. We talked about it just last segment with John Forslund, the team that's having fun. They're playing loose, and the Jets are going to need to be on their A game. When the two teams face off tomorrow at Bell MTS Place, the Jets, I guess, an advantage. The Hurricanes will be coming off of a back-to-back situation, having played in St. Paul tonight.
Right, and the Carolina Hurricanes were never a pushover. All Bill Peters' coach teams were tough to play against, and John Forslund touched on it last segment, Drew. I mean, the Carolina Hurricanes were pretty solid defensive team.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason why they've struggled, I think, to the degree in which they've struggled is quite obvious. The goaltending has been horrendous.
Yes.
And I'm a big fan of Scott Darling because I think he's got a very interesting story and he's gone through a lot in his life, but he wasn't as good as he could have been last year.
No, he was
certainly wasn't
last
the goalie that we saw in Chicago who did an awesome job when Corey Crawford wasn't in the net, right? Backing up Corey Crawford. So I think this team was kind of a sleeping giant a little bit last year. And if they got better goaltending, Dave, they probably would have been closer to a playoff spot. I'm not saying that they would have been a playoff team last year just with goaltending alone. But the point is they just didn't score enough. And Sebastian Aho is no longer a secret. I mean, he's coming off of the career year last year. Mm-hmm. He's an excellent player. He leads them offensively. And, you know, they made that move. And, you know, John Forslund, by the way, I think is one of the best play-by-play broadcasters in the entire game right now. And he always provides great insights when he comes onto the show. And when you talk about Michael Ferland, I mean, he's a guy that can put the puck in the net, but he's also a guy that can score, that can dish it as well. So physically. So when you're talking about this team, adding Andrei Svechnikov, it's similar to the Jets 2 years ago.
Adding Patrick Laine.
Right. A second overall pick, but not only a second overall pick, a guy that instantly makes you better offensively and quicker. I wouldn't be surprised if Svechnikov, and I probably speak for all of us, if he scores 25, 30 goals, 60 points this year, he's that good. It's very tough to just step into the league and be this good, and he has been. He's been one of their standouts, and it's only four games. I mean, let's not call the Hurricanes the best team in the league yet. They're 3-0-1. There's a lot of hockey to be played, similar to all other teams in the NHL. But the point is, I think, with the additions that they've made, they've got a little tougher,
mm-hmm.
and I think they've gotten better offensively because Noah Hanifin, I would probably argue, was a better all-around defenseman, more of a kind of a Jay Bouwmeester type. And I realize that he's been compared to Bouwmeester since he was drafted, but Dougie Hamilton's a better offensive defenseman. And when you throw in a guy like Michael Ferland, he's a guy that I mentioned. You know, he can fight, but he can also score. And I think, you know, this team has benefited from having these new faces in the lineup. It's been a breath of fresh air. You talk about, you know, their post-game celebration. You know, with a new coach and a bunch of new faces, you know, we talked about it. You know, Filip Zadina is another guy. He's playing for the Charlotte Checkers right now.
Yeah.
But a lot of people thought he was going to make the team. I mean, this team is clearly rebuilding. I still don't think they're going to be a playoff team, by the way, but they're going to be much harder to play against.
Well, certainly. And I mean, Dave, you asked John Forslund about it last segment. We're talking about the Carolina Hurricanes as they face the Winnipeg Jets tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. You asked John Forslund about it last segment, the influence that Rod Brind'Amour has had on this team and the impact of sort of changing from Bill Peters' time in Carolina had quite clearly come to an end. You know, the last two seasons he'd thrown players under the bus towards the end of the year, and this team needed a new voice and this team needed new leadership behind the bench. And so far, granted, through four games, Rod Brind'Amour is filling that void quite seamlessly.
Well, and I think, you know, John touched on it. It's all about work ethic. I mean, he needs to see that these guys, and they're going to see that this is a guy who, as a player, worked as hard as he did for what he earned, what he got based on his work ethic. And I think he's going to say that's the same thing that he demands of his players in today's game. He's going to respect you, but he's going to demand that your work ethic is at the top of its game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, look, they're a young team. So, like as he just said, you know, are we predicting them to win the Stanley Cup this year? No, of course not. But the fact of the matter is they've been that team that everybody's kind of almost kind of like the Arizona Coyotes here in the West, that team that's building kind of a youthful group of talented players that you're thinking to yourself, okay, they're close to taking that next step. Now, it looks like Carolina could be doing that this year, but again, it's early, so you got to caution that there's still a long season to go. But the fact of the matter is, and we talk about this with the Jets last year, it's always important to bank these points early in the season because you never know what's going to happen and when you may need them, i.e. the Florida Panthers last year, and look what happened to them. So to that point, I just think like Carolina is a fun team. They're an exciting young team. They've got a ton of talent, and they're an up-and-coming team out in the East.
I agree exactly. I mean, the goaltending, Curtis McElhinney, a good story so far. I don't trust Peter Mrazek whatsoever. I mean, he's just been bounced around. He had, a decent start to his career in Detroit. Last year in Philadelphia after he was traded there was a disaster. It's hard to trust him. You don't know what you're going to get in Scott Darling. So the goaltending is the big unknown. But the talent in front of the goaltending, especially on the back end, is terrific. I mean, Dougie Hamilton, I don't care that to criticize him for being interested in museums like they were doing in Calgary last season is just so ridiculous.
There was also the whole issue with his brother as well, because they traded his brother, Freddie Hamilton, and apparently Dougie Hamilton wasn't happy about that. And
so we don't blame him for that.
Well, and we don't know the full story, but I was surprised that they were going to move Dougie Hamilton. We heard about it, but I agree with you. Dougie Hamilton's an excellent defenseman. He's got the size.
Yeah.
I mean, he's physical, and he's a guy that can put up big numbers. He can easily put up 40 or 50 points for you. So I think he's made them better defensively as far as the offense goes, because they've already been a pretty sound defensive team.
That's right. You needed some more offense from the back. And, I think the Calvin DeHaan signing,
he's a good defenseman
went
too.
Well under the radar in free agency.
Well, and I remember when we were talking about Calvin DeHaan, we thought that the Islanders were going to keep him.
It's a sneaky good signing.
Yep.
He fits very well with what they're doing. He fits nicely so far next to Justin Falk.
Yep.
It's just one of those things. You look at that defense, very solid.
Yep.
That's a solid top six defense right there. I mean, you have some question marks about the depth that they have in their offensive, in their third and fourth lines. But, Svechnikov and, if Zadina tears it up at the AHL level, maybe you get him into the lineup.
Well, I also
lots
think
to like in Carolina.
I agree. It's also a team, I think, that doesn't have high expectations.
Right.
So you're able to put in a guy like Valentin Zaykov, who had a very good year in the AHL last year. He's obviously been a scratch a couple times here. Martin Nekash, who's also a high first-round draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in previous years, the Carolina Hurricanes wouldn't have put these players in these types of positions, because I think they realized, look at that division that they're in. Goes back to what I said before. I think they're going to be in tough to make the playoffs. I'm not saying that they're not going to be competitive. I just think when you look at their division, it's going to be very hard for them to beat out, let's say the Devils or the Flyers, for that last wild card spot, because I don't think anybody thinks this team's actually going to win the division. At least I don't. Maybe based on the first four games, people are getting a little bit excited in Carolina. But it's a very skilled team. They're going to score more goals than they did last year. And I think the most important thing, going back to what you said, Drew, is for the first time in a long time, you have reason for optimism in Carolina.
The trajectory is certainly pointing upwards. The Jets will get their first taste of the Carolina Hurricanes tomorrow night on home ice, a game you can hear, of course, live here on TSN 1290. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Michael Trakos, national hockey writer for Post Media. Always good to touch base with our buddy Michael. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.